TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness. Organic Food and Genetic Engineering. How Organics Can Stop GMOs. While the largest biotechnology corporations were holding their annual trade conference in San Diego, a meeting of farmers, scientists, investigative reporters, and authors was held to come up with ideas how to stop the spread of the so-called GMOs, genetically modified organisms. While many other countries ban or limit the planting of genetically modified crops, the U.S. is allowing untested crops, such as soy and corn, into open-field commercial plantings. GMO crops are so widespread that they have become part of most processed foods that contain soy or corn ingredients, and, unlike in Europe, there is no labeling. The well-known anti-globalization campaigner Vandana Shiva had come all the way from India, and you will hear a story that she has not told before. Trained as a physicist, she had chosen quantum theory for her career. But in 1984, violence erupted in Punjab. She realized that India had come under a new form of colonialism in the guise of the so-called Green Revolution, and possibly the same methods that Mahatma Gandhi had used to liberate India from the British would do the same now. But first, here is Brian Leahy, farmer and currently executive director of California Certified Organic Farmers. In his brief personal narrative, he will take you to the places he has worked, from organic farms to an urban market garden. He shows the range and possibilities of organic farming in the U.S. and the very important role we all have to play here. We do need to connect with the last remaining good farmers in our areas. That should be easy to do, since it not only benefits our health, but also makes us see the world with new eyes, from the ground up. Here is Brian Leahy.
You know, when you go into the grocery stores, it's pretty obvious that we're a dead culture. You know, it's dead food for a dead culture, and it makes sense. It makes USDA's policies make sense towards agriculture. People have forgotten how to eat, and the farmers forgotten how to feed the soil. What CCOF, California Certified Organic Farmers, is all about is to help a farming community get back to an organic-based agriculture, a biologically-based agriculture. And we have realized that to do that, we're going to have to re-educate people on how to eat, what real food is all about. In 1980, I started farming with a man. After World War II, come back from the war, and he was farming 2,000 acres of prime soil in the Sacramento Valley. And they started to introduce things like DDT. And he tried it. And it killed the fish, and it killed the birds. He said the birds were just flopping around. He said, I don't want any part of this. I've just gone through 4 years of killing, and I don't want to ever do it again. So he went on to biological-based agriculture. All his neighbors, everyone else, started using DDT. DDT killed everything. It created all kinds of problems. It not only killed the pests you were trying to kill, it killed the beneficials. The land-grant colleges, the University of California, and the ag extension people, they all came out and said, well, no problem. We got this other thing called organophosphates. It'll kill more stuff for you. And we got hooked. I mean, this agricultural community went from a biologically-based agriculture to a chemical, a toxic chemical biocide-based drug-addicted way of producing food. And food is what nourishes us. You know, food should be from a living system. And it can be. So anyways, Dick Carter's the guy I started farming with. We were biologically based. You know, we used a little this, a little that, but mostly we were working with the land and doing rotations. And then our neighbor came over, the Lumbergs, and said, well, if you go organic, you can sell it for a better price. And so we said, why not? You know, if the consumer's willing to pay a fair price, that's a nice change. So anyways, was growing rice. We were feeding with food calories, because rice and almonds and kiwi fruit and a few other things. I was probably feeding somewhere between 3,000 and 4,000 people. And in our rice fields, we had fish, and we had birds, and we had frogs. you know, our hatch rate for ducks and pheasants was better than the preserves that the federal government ran, you know, just to do that, because we did rotations. We actually had more land than water, but we weren't pushing every square inch. We weren't doing what Earl Butz called fence row farming. We were respectful of nature. We actually had a retired botanist came out. He did a plant survey and found just under 400 species and subspecies of plants growing on our farm. And don't forget, we're feeding 3,000 to 4,000 people at the same time. That is what a holistic system is all about, and that's what the promise of organic agriculture is. Now, things were going pretty good, and then I must have done something wrong in my last life because I ended up in Omaha, Nebraska. But I found a man who had gone organic in 1967. And he'd been university educated, he and his brother, and they were farming 1,000 acres of prime ground. And they did the whole bit. They went total chemical farming. And in the mid-60s, they started figuring out that it was a mistake, that they couldn't do the good crop rotations. They couldn't even get certain crops out of the ground anymore because the ground had just gotten hard and it was dying. I mean, there's more life under the soil than above it. The man that helped really get organic agriculture in the West revitalized was this guy named Sir Albert Howard. He was a crop advisor in India. He went over to India and he saw a whole nother system. And it's really based on the cycle of life and death and feeding the soil. You know, it's another one of those third world teaching us really what we forgot or never knew. But anyways, that was what it was about, is life in the soil. There, for a billion years, life has evolved in the soil. The plant interacts with the soil life. You get this soil life healthy and most of your problems are gone. If you're smart, not trying to push things too hard, which is what our economic system is all about. He decided, Dale Akron is the man I was farming with outside of Omaha. They went cold turkey organic in 67, and they had a real struggle for 3 or 4 years. But by the time I came along, we were growing. Our yields were better than the county average, and we were spending about 1/4 the cost because chemicals are expensive, and we were getting a good price, which was kind of sweet. And we were feeding a few hundred cows. We were producing a lot of food. And it was, you know, it was a pretty imbalanced system. And then I must have really did something wrong in another life because I ended up practicing legal aid law, poverty law. But while I was doing that, a friend of mine decided to start an inner city market garden. Within 5 years, the community, the local neighbors, had their own little plots on this thing. We did a lot of free legal advice. We had 12, 13, and 14-year-olds growing on the lot, selling in the farmer's market. They got to keep the proceeds. The federal government, the USDA, had been really guilty of ignoring the needs of minority farmers and organic farmers, but the black farmers, because there's only a handful left in this country, but at one time, this country, especially in the South, was full of black farmers, and during the civil rights days, the freedom marches, that's where most of the people stayed, was on black-owned farms. But anyways, USDA settled a suit and agreed to spend a bunch of money making up for their mistakes in the past, and one of them was a $150,000 food security grant to us to keep our little market garden going. So that's my knowledge of organic agriculture. And then I became the executive director of California Certified Organic Farmers. We have 1,000 members, people down here, we have people all over the country, but mainly we're based in California. And the goal of organic agriculture, it's biologically based, it's respectful of nature, and that's what genetically engineering is not. It's an attempt by these corporations that are used to dominating the legal system, thinking they can dominate nature, which is just utter and complete nonsense. You don't dominate nature, and I can tell you that. But how are we going to make this sustainable? Because right now, the farming communities in the United States and all over the world is really hurting. I was in a meeting in Switzerland with farmers from all over the world. These farms, people from the tribal people from the Philippines, are saying the same. I mean, they could be the farmer from Nebraska. I cannot get enough for my food to make a living, to feed my own children. You know, I went, this little grapefruit here, I bought this at Whole Foods, and it's organic, it's from one of my members. you know, this is pretty remarkable. If you eat food as nature intended, you'll get the nutrition you need. If you go buy Oreos, you'll spend $3 a pound, and you're screwing your body up. I mean, a lot of this junk food, they take the minerals and the nutrients out so that your body doesn't get the message that it's full. You know, you can buy an apple for 50 cents, you can buy a Coke for 50 cents. You know, that apple is pretty refreshing. It's good for you. And if you buy it in a farmer's market, I mean, it's really sweet. You know, here in California, we have farmer's markets everywhere. And if you spend 50 cents to buy this thing, that farmer got 50 cents straight. If you bought it in the store, maybe they got 20 cents. If you bought a processed good, like a loaf of wheat, you know, maybe you spent $1 for that loaf of wheat, the farmer maybe got 5 cents. And the rest of it went for processing. So a lot of how we're going to change society is in our food choices, in our buying choices. And that's really the way the Europeans have stopped GMOs. Is they said, we ain't going to buy this nonsense. It's pretty powerful, that dollar. I mean, it's the one thing that people get in corporate America. If you don't buy it and they lose money, then they don't do it anymore. And so all you got to do is go into your stores and say, you know what? I don't want any more food that was produced with biocides. I don't need food that kills the birds, kills the soil, kills the farmer, and probably ain't good for me. I want real food, and I'm willing to pay a few extra pennies for that food. So anyways, all I'm saying is you guys make the difference. You can stop this technology dead right now by going in your stores and saying, you know, I don't want any GMO crap in my body. I'm not going to feed my children this nonsense. I want to know that it's pure, that it doesn't have GMOs in it. And then while you're at it, go and demand that your food's organic. Go to Whole Foods and say, start buying organic again on a regular basis, all the time. It's here. It's available. Quit playing games with us.
That was Brian Leahy, Executive Director of California Certified Organic Farmers. Now you will hear from Vandana Shiva from India, physicist, feminist, author of many books, organic farmer and seed saver. Well known for her writing and eloquent speaking on the dangers of globalization. Vandana Shiva.
If I've traveled all this way, and I hate flights, and I love being on our organic farm, it's because I know that unless we all join forces, the options we want to create for ourselves will not be created. I really thought I'd spend all my life doing quantum theory, which is what I chose as a career. But in 84, 4th of June, a temple in Punjab was invaded by the army because there was as good as a civil war taking place in that state. Punjab, as you know, was the home of the Green Revolution. The Green Revolution was supposed to bring prosperity. It was the alternative to the Red Revolution, which was supposed to have brought violence. And yet the Green Revolution brought violence like we've never known in our country. By the end of, I think, by 21st, Indira Gandhi had been assassinated because she had triggered this action. And for me, it was a very big puzzle. Why does the revolution, which is supposed to produce wealth, abundance, and peace, end up creating war, discontent, and anger of the scale that we saw happen in Punjab? And I just started to go back to that state and started to study agriculture and started to study the impacts of the Green Revolution. And out of it, the book that's called The Violence of the Green Revolution, that became, in a way, the first book on the real story about the environmental and social costs of the. And I must tell you that the entire establishment, whether it was in India or internationally, was just so angry about that book because it was an honest story about the fact that there hadn't been more food produced because food had been robbed from the earthworms, it had been robbed from the cows, it had been robbed from local communities. A very diverse area had been converted to monocultures of rice and wheat with explosion of pests like we've never seen. Today in that state, even the pollinators don't exist. I've started working with children on pollinators because my trips to Punjab showed me, my God, we're wiping out life so rapidly. By November that year, we had another lesson of what these biocides do because 3,000 people were killed by Union Carbide's pesticide plant in Bhopal. And that day, I decided to start ecological alternatives. And I remember carrying back from Delhi saplings of neem, this amazing tree that has been used indigenously for pest control. We started a campaign called No More Bhopals, Plant a Neem. By 94, the neem was getting patented by W.R. Grace. 87, at a meeting on biotechnology, that's the time, very honestly, the industry laid out their dream and vision and fears. They laid out that by the turn of the century, there'd be five companies controlling our food and health. And the three instruments they would use would be mergers and acquisitions to become five rather than the hundreds of seed companies and the pharmaceutical industry and the seed industry and the biotech venture firms, all different. And actually, they were very accurate by the year 2000, you know. Ciba-Geigy and Sandoz had already merged and become Novartis. They had then merged with AstraZeneca, which had merged and had become Syngenta. And that was happening just every one of these few. The second instrument, they said, was genetic engineering. They'd started already using public funds to release GMOs. In this case, it was for river blindness. And I asked if they'd done the ecological test. They said, if we stop to do the tests, we lose out in this race to be one of those five. So we got to release this stuff, get the money from WHO, get into the market. And I realized then they were actually more desperate than the poorest of peasants. Because they were on their own logic, their logic of the cancer cell in a struggle for survival. And the third instrument they laid out very clearly was the patenting issue, having monopolies in seeds and plants. That's the day I decided, I just went home, you know, at a press conference after this big conference where it was becoming clear where the industry wanted to take the world. And I was asked by a journalist, what would you do in such a case of monopoly? And I thought, I said, you know, we've had monopolies before, we've had empires before, and we found ways to resist before. And I thought of Gandhi, who resisted an empire that controlled 85% of the territory of the world, a little island nation, of which this area was also a colony. And then all he did was pull out a spinning wheel. He didn't know how to use it. He didn't even know spinning wheels existed. He dug it up, found an old woman who taught him how to spin, and then he started to teach everyone how to spin and said, if we spin our own cloth, we can bring down the empire. And that's how Khadi started. At the time when he started this, only 2% of our clothing was being woven by hand because the rest of the industry had been destroyed. By the time, about a decade ago, till globalization started to bring us back to the colonial arrangements, our production of cloth was 75% in the handloom sector, back again. 75% of a billion people's clothing needs met by just little looms. And I just thought, we've got to start doing agriculture in a way that creates a different freedom. Started to learn about how to save seeds, founded Navdanya, the seed-saving movement, which is now very vibrant and very dynamic. The pockets of organic farming are the only areas without economic distress. Otherwise, you're seeing literally epidemics of farm suicides raging across the country, wherever farmers have got hooked into hybrid seeds, chemicals, and the chemicals necessarily requiring huge amounts of irrigation. That's a part of industrial agriculture that's not talked about enough. We are told it produced more food. It didn't produce more food. But now I spent 20 years looking at this, and I can tell you, industrial agriculture doesn't produce more food, it just uses more chemicals. And it was not the hunger of the soil and not the hunger of the people, but the hunger of profits that really drove it. And it was the case in this country as much as in the third world. And genetic engineering, using the arguments that it's about feeding the world, is actually as illusionary as the chemical revolution feeding the world. And just as the chemical revolution took away food from other species, took away food from people, I have watched in villages people run to the market with their grain to sell it because they've got to get it out so that they can pay back the credit for the inputs they bought. I've seen in the most beautiful tribal areas women selling their silver jewelry, handcrafted silver jewelry, pawning it to buy urea, because it's been made to look like the new silver and the new gold. And Everywhere in the world today, if there's hunger, it's because systems of agriculture are forcing peasants to sell everything they grow just to buy the inputs. Why should food producers be hungry? They're hungry because they're not able to keep their food. They're selling every bit they grow, which then rots. And meantime, they're going destitute. It's a system which is leading to this collapse of farm incomes, because agriculture has been transformed from being a real productive system where whatever a farmer spends and the right living wage, everyone talks about a living wage for everyone else but farmers. They're the one community which labors the maximum but don't get a living wage. They're told, we'll support you to make yourself extinct, you know. The exit policies in WTO, the exit policies in the farm bills of USA. They've killed 2.5 million cattle in the UK this year. And they said only those farmers would get compensation who'd given underwriting that they would never return to farming. And I'm convinced that that slaughter of animals with foot and mouth, which is a totally curable disease, was linked to wiping out the farm base of the small-scale production. It has nothing to do with hazards. It has nothing to do with dangers either to human health or animal health. It's extremely curable disease. Within a month, we cure it with about 20 very simple, the root of the buckwheat, the kernel of the peach tree. Every village in India, they use it. All it does is for a month, your animal doesn't have that higher production of milk or that good output in terms of energy. On our organic farms, and I'm talking about an organic farm we run ourselves, but more than 2,000 members of our organization, Navdanya, farm incomes are threefold more than the chemical farms because the farmers are not wasting their scarce money on buying chemicals. But not only are farm incomes more, their production is more. The output is more. And I don't know, sixth grade, you remember in physics they teach you about lines that look like they're approaching but they're actually diverging? It's a phenomena called optical illusion. And I think we, you know, agribusiness, when culture went out of agriculture, and our ability through that culture to understand when more is more and less is less, was replaced by agribusiness playing optical illusions with us and making us see more when there was less and less when there was more. And we're still being taken for a ride with that on genetic engineering. And I think it's really time to bring back our eyes, bring back our own minds to make our assessments about when is more food produced. More food can't be produced when impoverished monocultures replace rich biodiversity. Monocultures are extremely low-yielding systems. They are high commodity-producing systems. But high commodity production for marketing is not the same as more food for feeding the world. I think it's also, we've reached the stage where we know that it's only to the extent we feed other species, we can feed ourselves. And all attempts to make it look like the protection of the environment and wilderness and other species means taking food away from ourselves doesn't work. In terms of water use, industrial agriculture, in my calculation, shows we've used 5 times more water to produce the same amount of food. And that's why every aquifer is disappearing. Because these varieties that were bred were not meant to conserve. They needed huge chemicals. The chemicals needed high doses of water. And in fact, the high yield of even the individual commodity is actually just water. That's another reason peasants run to sell it. One is they've got to pay back the creditors. The second is if they hold it back, it rots. And the weight comes down. So they find out which day is the marketing day, and they run back and harvest that day so that the water weight comes back to them in cash. I'm absolutely convinced it's the organic movement that will contain the GM spread and the GM contamination. And I don't think the genetic engineering debate is about what science you do. It's about what world you live in. what we choose as our options. And to me, the options are very clear. A system that protects the earth and other species, conserves resources, produces more food and better food is definitely better than a system that wipes out species, wipes out farmers, destroys resources, produces less food and bad food at that. Shouldn't take too much effort to make the choice. But what we'll have to do is two things. One is constantly keep the issue of our life choices in front. And that those choices are in our hands, we have to make them in our everyday behavior. And the second is not allow the divide and rule policies that are systematically institutionalized to work. You're going to be repeatedly told the reason you have to eat poison food is somehow you're eating poison food feeds a baby in India. Doesn't work that way, you know. In the coming years, the links between globalization and the inevitability of genetic engineering will be used to prevent people from having their options. I know in my country where 75% of our 750 million people survive today because they live on land. And they have no survival if they are displaced from land. It's the reason we've been able to feed ourselves. We've been able to ensure our food needs are met. That system can only work if we reduce our costs of production, reduce our inputs in terms of chemicals, refuse to allow our seed to be patented so that our debt increases tenfold, which is what patents would mean, that the rice that is ours, the canola, the mustard that's ours, the cotton that's ours, ends up being a system of generating royalty payments, exactly like there were land and agricultural taxes in the colonial time, which were the real roots of famine in that period, as these will become the real roots of famine in the future. To me, organic is essential for avoiding famine. It's essential for avoiding civil war.
That was Vandana Shiva. Her ideas and practice as activist have deeply influenced the course of the anti-globalization movement, not just in India, but across the world. She heads the Research Foundation for Science, Technology, and Ecology in New Delhi, India. She lives on an organic farm and is the author of many books, such as Monoculture of the Mind and Biopiracy, the Plunder of Nature and Knowledge. I hope you have a pen handy to take down a phone number. You can find more information on organic food and genetic engineering on TUC Radio's website, www.tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under newest programs. You can get a copy of the full one-hour program, Organic Food and Genetic Engineering. TUC Radio is listener-supported and free to all radio stations. Your tape order helps us stay on the air. Call us toll-free anytime at 877-TUC-TAPE for information on how to order. You can get your tape by mail or credit card, by phone or on the web. Our toll-free phone number, 877-TUC-TAPE, translates into 877-882-8273. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.